Section 2. Common misconceptions about Sunnah and Hadith. We come to the first misconception, and that is, Sunnah and Hadith are synonymous. The word Hadith is often understood to be a synonym for the word Sunnah. This is not correct. There is a great difference between the two, not only regarding the extent of their authenticity, but also their content. A narrative of the words, deeds, or tacit approvals of the Prophet Muhammad is called hadith. It does not add anything to the content stated in the Quran and Sunnah, the two original sources of Islam. A hadith, which is the plural of hadith, only explain and elucidate what is contained in these two sources and also describe the exemplary way in which the Prophet Muhammad followed Islam. The scholars of hadith say that a hadith may be true or it may be false. For this reason, a hadith are also called dhanni, which means presumptive or indefinite. On the other hand, the word sunnah literally means the busy path, the trodden path, or the beaten path. As a term, it refers to the practices of the Prophet Abraham sallallahu alaihi wasallam, to which the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam gave religious sanction among his followers after reviving and reforming them and after making certain additions to them. The Quran has directed the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam to obey these Abrahamic practices in the following words: ثُمَّ أَوْحَيْنَا إِلَيْكَ أَنِ اتَّبِعْ مِلَّةَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ حَنِيفًا وَمَا كَانَ مِنَ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. Then we revealed to you to follow the ways of Abraham, who was true in faith and was not among the polytheists. Surah number 16, verse 123. The following three aspects further bring out the difference between hadith and sunnah. Firstly, while a hadith can be inauthentic or spurious, the sunnah cannot be so. The sunnah is in fact as authentic as the Quran. This is because of the difference in the nature of transmission. Ahadith have been transmitted by a few individuals and therefore become dependent on their character, memory and intellect, all of which can falter even if the person in question is very pious. On the other hand, the sunnah has been transmitted by whole generations to the next. Such is the vast number of people who have adhered to certain practices that there is no possibility of any error. The memory, intellect and character of a few persons can falter, but when thousands of people deliver the same thing, any faulty transmission is ruled out. Furthermore, not only have a large number of people transmitted these practices, but also there is a consensus in the Ummah regarding the authenticity of these practices. In other words, even people who do not adhere to these practices also vouch for their veracity. Secondly, Sunnah is purely related to the practical aspects of Islam, such as a prayer, Hajj, Nikah, Wudu, and Tayammum. Issues that pertain to belief, history, occasion of revelation, and explanation of Quranic verses lie outside its domain. On the other hand, ahadith are not confined to a certain sphere of Islam. Their content ranges from the practical issues of religion to intellectual ones, and from historical episodes to explanation of the Quran and of the Sunnah itself. Thirdly, the Sunnah is not based on ahadith. For instance, we have not adopted the prayer, pilgrimage, etc. in all their details because a few narrators explained them to us. On the contrary, we have adopted them because every person in our surroundings is either adhering to it or vouching for its veracity. In other words, Sunnah is an entirely independent source of Islam. However, some ahadith may contain a record of the Sunnah, just as they may contain the record and explanation of certain verses of the Quran. But just as having a record of the Quran does not make ahadith the same as the Quran, having a record of the Sunnah does not make ahadith equivalent to the Sunnah. We now come to the second common misconception about hadith and Sunnah, and that is, every act of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is a Sunnah. Some people are of the opinion that every act and every deed done by the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is a sunnah. While critically analyzing this concept, Javed Ahmed Ghamadi writes, "The Quran is absolutely clear that the prophets of God were sent to deliver his religion. In their prophetic capacity, the ambit of their thoughts and deeds was only that of religion. Everything besides this was primarily of no concern to them. No doubt, besides their prophetic capacity, they were also Ibrahim ibn Azar, Musa ibn Imran, Isa ibn Maryam, and Muhammad ibn Abdullah in their human capacity. However, in this human capacity, they never asked obedience from their followers. All their demands were confined to their prophetic capacity, and what was given to them in this capacity was religion, and thus it was only religion whose propagation they were liable to. The Quran says, شَرَى لَكُم مِّنَ الدِّينِ مَا وَصَّى بِهِ نُوحًا وَالَّذِي أَوْحَيْنَا إِلَيْكَ وَمَا وَصَّيْنَا بِهِ إِبْرَاهِيمَ وَمُوسَى وَعِيسَى أَنْ أَقِيمُوا الدِّينَ وَلَا تَتَفَرَّقُوا فِيهِ. He has enjoined on you the same religion which he enjoined on Noah and which we have now revealed to you, which we enjoined on Abraham, Moses and Jesus, with the assertion, adhere to this religion in your lives and do not create any divisions in it. Surah number 42, verse 13. Consequently, it is known history that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam used weapons like swords and arrows in wars, traveled on camels, constructed a mosque whose roof was made of palm tree stems, ate foods which were customary in the Arab society, and showed his like and dislike for them, wore a certain dress which was in vogue in Arabia, and whose selection also had much to do with his personal taste. However, none of these things can be termed sunnah, and neither can any man of learning regard them to be sunnah. At one instance, the Prophet ﷺ is reported to have said, I am also a human being. When I direct you about something which relates to your religion, take it from me. And when I express my own opinion about something which is outside this sphere, then my status in this regard is nothing more than that of a human being. I had conjectured about something. Do not hold me accountable for such things which are based on opinion and conjecture. However, if I say something on behalf of God, take it, because I will never forge a lie on God. You very well know about your worldly affairs. Muslim, Al-Jami' As-Sahih, Volume 4, pages 1835 to 1836, Hadith numbers 2361 to 2363. We now come to the third common misconception about Sunnah and Hadith, and that is, the Quran should be interpreted through Hadith. There is a group of scholars which believes that the Quran is dependent on a Hadith for its interpretation and must at all costs be understood through it. However, the status occupied by the Quran as the Mizan and the Furqan entails that everything should be interpreted in the light of the guidance it provides. Javed Ahmed Ghamadi writes, the Quran says about itself, Allahu allazi anzal al-kitaba bil-haqqi wal-mizan. It is God who has revealed with truth the book, which is the scale of justice. Surah number 42, verse 17. The verse means that the Almighty has revealed the Quran, which is a scale of justice meant to distinguish good from evil. It is the only scale that weighs everything else, and there is no scale in which it can be weighed. At another place, the Quran states, تَبَارَكَ الَّذِي نَزَلَ الْفُرْقَانَ عَلَىٰ عَبْدِهِ لِيَكُونَ لِلْعَالَمِينَ نَظِيرًا. Blessed be he who has revealed Al-Furqan to his servant, that it may warn the whole world. Surah number 25, verse 1. The Quran is also a Furqan in the same sense that is a book which has the final and absolute verdict to distinguish truth from falsehood. This word also connotes the fact that this book is the standard on which everything needs to be judged and is a decisive word on matters which relate to religion. Everyone must turn to it only to resolve differences of opinion. Nothing can be a judge on it. It shall reign supreme in the dominion of religion, and every person is bound not to make it subservient to any other thing. The Quran is the most definite and authentic record of whatever Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam did in his status of a prophet and a messenger. Consequently, most topics covered in the Hadith are related to the Quran the way a branch is related to a stem, or the way an explanation is related to the text it explains. Without a recourse to the original text, it is obvious that its corollaries and explanations cannot be understood. If all the mistakes in interpreting the Hadith are minutely analyzed, this situation becomes abundantly clear. The incidents of stoning to death in the times of the Prophet Muhammad, the assassination of Ka'b ibn Ashraf, the punishment meted out in the graves. Narratives such as مَنْ بَدَّلَ دِينَهُ فَقْتُلُوهُ or execute the person who changes his faith have become issues which have caused a lot of confusion and have been subjected to misinterpretation because they have not been understood by relating them to their bases in the Quran. Javed Ahmed Ghamidi, Mizan, pages 24 and 64. We now come to the fourth common misconception about Sunnah and Hadith, and that is, our Hadith are as authentic as the Quran. There are scholars who believe that the Ahadith are as authentic as the Quran. This view is not correct. Whilst there is no need to investigate the authenticity of the Quran, both the text and narration of Ahadith require investigation. Javed Ahmed Ghamidi, while explaining this, writes, "It is the chain of narration of a narrative which makes it a Hadith that can be attributed to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. In addition to any hidden flaws in the chain of narration of a Hadith, the trustworthiness of the narrators, their memory, and the contemporaneousness of the narrators are the three standards which should be kept in consideration in the light of the material which the scholars of Hadith have painstakingly made available. This is the standard which scholars of Hadith have put forth for the examination of the chain of narration of a Hadith, and is so sound that no addition can be made to it, nor anything taken away from it. Since attributing something suspect to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam can be of severe consequences in this world and in that to come, it is necessary to apply the standard without any lenience and with absolute impartiality to every narrative attributed to him. Only those narratives should be considered acceptable which fully conform to this standard. Thus, no narrative ascribed to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, even if found in primary works as the Al-Jami' As-Sahih of Imam Bukhari, Al-Jami' As-Sahih of Imam Muslim, and the Mu'atta of Imam Malik, can be accepted without application of this standard. Besides investigating the chain of narration of a hadith, the second thing which requires investigation is the text of a hadith. Although scholars of hadith have left no stone unturned in investigating the characters and biographies of the narrators and have spent a greater part of their lives in this research, yet, like every human endeavor, the natural flaws which still exist in the narration of a hadith require that the following two things must always remain in consideration while investigating the text of a hadith. 1. Nothing in it should be against the Quran and the Sunnah. 2. Nothing in it should be against established facts derived from knowledge and reason. The Quran, it has been alluded to earlier, is the mizan, or the scale of the truth, and the furqan, or the distinguisher between truth and falsehood. It is like a guardian of every religious concept, and it has been revealed as a barometer to judge between what is right and what is wrong. Thus, no further explanation is required of the fact that if anything is against the Quran, then it must stand rejected. Similar is the case of the Sunnah. Whatever religion has been received through it is as certain and authentic as the Quran, as has been explained earlier. There is no difference between the level of authenticity of the two. Just as the Quran is validated through the consensus of the Ummah, the Sunnah is also determined from its consensus. Since this fact is an absolute reality about the Sunnah, thus if a hadith is against the Sunnah, and if there is no way out to resolve a conflict between the two, the hadith in consideration must necessarily be rejected. Established facts derived from knowledge and reason have also the same status in this regard. The Quran is absolutely clear that its message is based on these established facts. Its arguments on such basic issues as Tawheed and the hereafter are primarily based on these facts. It is the requirements and demands of these facts that the Quran highlights through its teachings. Every student of the Quran is aware that it presents these facts as deciding factors for the message it puts forth. It presented them as the final word both before the idolaters of Arabia and the people of the book. Those who oppose these are regarded by it as people who follow their base desires. Thus, intuitive realities, historical truths, results of experience and observation, all are discussed in the Quran in this very capacity. Hence, how can a hadith which is against these facts, regarded by the Quran as ones which distinguish between the truth and the untruth, be accepted? it is obvious that it shall stand rejected. All leading scholars of hadith also hold this view. Khatib Baghdadi writes in Kifaya fi Ilm al-Rawaya, page 432, "A khabar al-wahid cannot be accepted which is against sense and reason, is against an established and explicit directive of the Quran, is against a known sunnah, or is against a practice which is observed like the sunnah, or its conflict with some conclusive argument becomes absolutely evident." Javed Ahmed Ghamidi, Mizan, pages 61 to 63. We now come to the fifth common misconception about sunnah and ahadith, and which is, ahadith can be interpreted independently. A general practice in interpreting ahadith is that each narrative is interpreted independently, even if its variant text exists. As a result, the complete picture in which a directive was given is sacrificed, and one often ends up deducing a directive from incomplete data. It needs to be appreciated that all the variant texts of a hadith must be studied in order to form an opinion about it. While explaining this important aspect, Javed Ahmed Ghamidi writes, "Many a time a person may form an opinion about a hadith by not studying its variants. However, once he deliberates on all the variants, his overall interpretation changes. One glaring example of this is the ahadith which mention the prohibition of pictures and portraits. If only some of the narratives are studied, one can easily conclude that this prohibition is absolute and every picture and portrait is prohibited in Islam. However, if all the variants are collected and analyzed, it becomes evident that the prohibition is regarding only those pictures which have been made for worshipping." Many similar examples can be cited from the corpus of hadith literature. Thus, it is essential that if one is not satisfied from the apparent words of a hadith, one must gather and collate all its variants to form an opinion. Javed Ahmed Ghamidi, Mizan, pages 64 and 65.